Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace coming at you here on this Tuesday. Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. Caroline is going to be back with us tomorrow. In the meantime, yesterday, as is always the case, Memorial Day, you get up 11 a.m. on ESPN, you see the brackets. So now 18 straight years, Vanderbilt is in the tournament. And, of course, the last few years, Tennessee has really come on. They are now the number one overall seed on the road to Omaha. Mitch Light has been covering college baseball for The Athletic all year long. So he had a column on his first thoughts of the bracket, and we're going to ask him about that. Plus, Mitch, as you know, joins our show every week during the football season on the goings-on in college football, the SEC meetings going on down in Destin right now. So a lot of news. Mitch, welcome to the show.
Willie, thanks for having me. Hope you guys are doing well.
We are doing well. We are doing well. First, give us your thoughts, your overall thoughts on the bracket when it came out. We talked with you last week during the SEC tournament, and there were five teams on the bubble for the SEC. I guess I was a little bit surprised, but I shouldn't be, that all five got in. I thought from a political standpoint, they would try to get one more little guy in there somewhere. But the committee, and I think from this part of the country, probably no complaints. They, even Florida at 28-27 for the season got in because of their strength of schedule.
Yeah, I mean, I really felt strongly that all five deserved to get in and thought they would get in. You know, Florida played 35 games against teams in the NCAA tournament field. Just 35 games. They went 14-21, so it's not a great record, but it's not a bad record when you're playing the best teams in the country. And they played 18 games against the top eight national seeds. Just think about 18 games against top national seeds, and they went 7-11. Now, I understand the argument other parts of the country, other teams in other leagues don't have that opportunity because they don't play in a league with all those ranked teams that are going to get in. But they also, every year they play Florida State three midweek games, and they play Miami every year. Now, Miami wasn't very good this year, but that's still a name program that is often in NCAA tournament. So I think, you know, based on the goings-on in Hoover, the only two teams that were probably sort of nervous were Florida and Alabama, although Alabama, you know, entered the week with the highest RPI, so I think they probably felt pretty good. So, yeah, it's an interesting thing, really, too, is you had five teams on the bubble, and Florida was the only one of that group to get a three seed, so all of them were very comfortable in the field.
How much do you think, you were down amongst all of the writers in Hoover last week, the top three national seeds are all SEC, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. Texas A&M is the third overall national seed, Kentucky second, Tennessee first.
Yes.
Okay, so, and then you've got the five bubble teams that get in. So it gives you an idea of how tough the league is relative to the rest of the country. How much do you think NIL and the fact that there's some great crowd support just makes the league that much tougher? I guess we'll find out in the coming days as the tournament starts.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, just look at the transfers. The league is littered with impact transfers. And I haven't, you know, I watched a lot of the ACC tournament too, and North Carolina has key transfers. You know, Duke actually has a lot of transfers as well, very good team. But the SEC has probably more than its share of high impact transfers. And it's a lot of that's NIL, but a lot of it is just, it just feeds off of itself. Like, SEC baseball is the best, so kids want to play there, and it keeps getting better. I remember 2 years ago, I sat just randomly at a Vanderbilt Kentucky baseball game. I sat next to a parent of a commit. Like, he was like a 26 or a 27 commit. You know how baseball, the kids right. Commit so far down the road. He was from Southern California. At one point, he was committed to Arizona. But the dad was like, the kid wasn't there, just the dad was there. And I started talking to him. He's like, everyone wants to play in the SEC. All these kids from Southern California want to play in the SEC. The biggest stadiums, the biggest crowds, NIL, all this stuff. And, you know, you look at it and UCLA. Look at UCLA these last 2 years. They have, for such a proud program, they've been very bad. Now, you know, there's been a little bit of a revival this year. Santa Barbara was very good. Oregon State's good. Arizona's good. But the big picture is kids want to play in the SEC. And so SEC is just not recruiting east of the Mississippi or the Southeast footprint, which maybe was the case 20 years ago. You know, look at Tennessee's roster. It used to be like sort of like Vanderbilt was the one that recruited nationally. Tennessee's littered with California kids. Every SEC program recruits nationally pretty much.
So tell me about Tennessee's draw. The one thing that everybody jumped out and looked at from an excitement standpoint or a drama standpoint, you make note of this in your column, is that perhaps if Wake Forest advances and Tennessee advances, which they'll be heavily favored to do, you've got a little reunion that could happen on the mound with a former Tennessee Vol standout on the mound, now pitching for Wake Forest, who made it all the way to the finals last year and almost won the whole thing. But now they've got one of Tennessee's best pitchers from last year.
I don't want to oversell this, but if that comes to fruition.
Oh, my God. It is going to be unbelievable.
Honestly, it will be, and I'm sure, I don't know, this week Wake Forest, I think they pretty much announced they're holding Burns for game two. So he's pitching Saturday this week.
Yeah, this is Chase Burns we're talking about.
Yes, Chase Burns. So I don't know if they would come back with him on Friday or Saturday, but let's say it's a Friday night or Saturday night. ESPN's not dumb. They're going to put the game on prime time. The most anticipated college baseball game, maybe that's not in the College World Series in years. I mean, remember like when Kumar Rocker got really good at the end of his freshman year and then before the pandemic, it was like sort of like he was a rock star.
It was
like must-see TV nationally even because of his name and all that stuff. Well, Chase Burns, his year has been, like, I don't say overshadowed by Hagen Smith at Arkansas because they both had great years, but Chase Burns' numbers have just been incredible. He leads the nation in strikeout percentage. He's been very, very, very good. And just the energy in that stadium on a Saturday night at Lindsey Nelson would be out of control. I hope it happens. Both teams obviously have to win their regionals. But, you know, college baseball will be in the national stage if that happens.
And like you said, it's not just that Burns is a great pitcher. It's that when he pitches, there's an energy level, there is an intensity, there is an emotional outburst.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he used to play for the team that was known for that more than anything else as a group. But now he's the guy going against these guys.
So can you
imagine the jawing and the woofing back and forth and the craziness that could happen there? I just hope we see
it. And I'm not breaking ground here, Willie. I mean, he left here falling out with the coaching staff.
Yes,
you know,
he did.
So it's just there's no love lost there. The fans, and like this is Wake Forest, whenever they tweet anything out about Chase Burns, the Wake Forest SID told me this, whenever they tweet anything about Chase Burns, their mentions are flooded with Tennessee fans. Like, they have not moved on.
They hadn't gotten over it, Mitch.
They have not moved on. Now, you know, sort of like, you know, you break up with a girlfriend, you got a good look, you know, it's time to move on. Well, they have not moved on. So that would be, and Chase, it's interesting because you watch him pitch, so much energy, like you said, almost over-the-top celebration. But when I did that story in Wake Forest early in the year, I interviewed him. Like, could not be more calm, normal, just like understated kid. And it was just, it's such a contrast watching him pitch and then watching him off the field.
We're talking with Mitch Light of The Athletic. Now, Mitch, are you surprised that because when the tournament started, SEC tournament, UT was upset, however you want to call it, upset beat by Vandy. And they're in the loser's bracket. So you would almost think like a team, I guess my two-part question would be this. A team like UT, they lose and they automatically go to the loser bracket. You would almost think that this team would sort of want to save themselves and say, okay, listen, we're in the loser's bracket. Let's just get ourselves ready for the World Series tournament and stuff like that. Typically, when it happens, you see that team exit very early in the tournament just to get ready for the other tournament. Not that they wanted to lose, but it's like the mindset now is let's preserve our energy. Let's get ready for the tournament. But that's not what UT did. Did they have to win the SEC tournament in order to get a number one bid? Because we look at Kentucky and what they were able not to do, but they still got a number two bid in the tournament.
Ultimately, I think they would have been number one even if they went two and out because North Carolina did not win the ACC tournament. Kentucky and A&M did not win. But to your first point, and I think it's one of the most fascinating things. You know, I love college baseball, love the sport. I think it's just one of the most fascinating dynamics in the sport with these conference tournaments, for these power conference teams. Like the psychology of wanting to win, wanting to preserve your pitching. Now, I think coaches are smart nowadays. They don't overextend their pitching when they don't need to. And I think Chris Burke was talking about on the broadcast the best. You can go down there with the, oh, let's just, you know, get comfortable, get some guys some innings and whatever. We'll go home and relax. But when they're on the field, they want to win those games. There is intensity down there. I don't care who's playing. There's so much intensity down there. So, like, and the dynamics have also changed where, yes, there's a loser's bracket, but it's not the same as a loser's bracket in a four-team regional or, like, Willie, as you remember back in the days when you could end up playing a doubleheader on Saturday. The fact that they've eliminated that they've made Saturday single elimination, you know, teams don't have to play more games. Like, Tennessee basically played the same amount of games as LSU did because LSU started a day early. Mm. So I think kind of falls in line for those top teams. If you can survive day one, or if you get through day one when you're usually not pitching one of your weekend starters, mm-hmm. and then you have kind of your weekend rotation set up, and that's the way it played out for Tennessee, Derek. So I don't think they overextended themselves at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's plenty of examples of teams going 0-2 in the SEC tournament, then making a run to the national title, or the 2019 Vanderbilt team won it all, emotional last game, rallying from 10-0, and they went on to win it. So there's just not enough data to suggest which way mm-hmm. is better, as long as you don't overextend your pitching.
Yeah, because that's, you know, when you're talking about college basketball and their tournaments are going on, it's almost, you know, when they're in the tournament, if a team, say a Kentucky or a UT, if they lose in a tournament, it's not a big deal because it's like, okay, we're just resting for, you know, March
yeah.
Madness.
Yeah. It's a great but question. How much should you
different.
Be able
yeah.
to improve your seed based on how well you do in the conference tournament? Because it
exactly.
seems like sometimes the committee is indifferent.
Yeah, so like, and that's why I asked, well, had Tennessee not won, would they still have yeah. been a number one seed? And more than likely, they probably would have, considering what happened around them. What do you make of, obviously, the SEC is having their big meetings in Destin this week, I believe. And obviously, the topic of conversation is the money and things are changing within the NCAA. Where do you see this thing ultimately going? Because it seems like every time we think, you know, this is the last change, here comes another huge change. We thought NIL was the end-all, be-all, but now it seems like the goalpost is being moved, and it's not just NIL. Now it's paying players, the universities, some other things that are going on within not just the SEC, but I'm sure the Big Ten and these other big conferences. So what do you make of this year's meetings in Destin?
Yeah, it's ongoing. I think I've seen two quotes from coaches that kind of summarize it. One was Kalen DeBoer, who's basically like, I don't overreact to anything. I'm just trying to gain information and get all the, you know, understand what we need to do going forward. And I think that's every coach's plan because they just don't know. And then Clark Lee was quoted as over the ambiguity over roster caps, which is all tied into NIL and revenue share. He said, what I've heard is that everything I've heard is not to be trusted. So to share an opinion now is irresponsible. So, like, that's very Clark Lee, by the way he said it. But it's just sort of like these coaches are learning as they're going. And, you know, if there are roster caps and then financial caps for these players, you can't do that unless there's collective bargaining. That's what we've learned this whole time. You cannot limit someone's earnings unless it's been collectively bargained. This is not my area of expertise at all, but to me that's the ultimate end game, is some sort of collective bargaining where there's some sort of caps. But then another thing, and I'm kind of rambling here, if you do have capping NIL based on what universities can give, whether it's the revenue sharing, whatever percent of it is, does that stop them from getting NIL from the local car dealership? No, it doesn't. No. So it just because you're getting money from the school, that doesn't limit how much money these guys and gals are going to be able to get.
That's an important point. I guess it's just like mm-hmm. If D-Mace is being paid $3 million a year for the Titans, it doesn't mean he can't go do commercials and things like that to supplement that, which doesn't count against the cap. But you do wonder, you would figure there's going to be some games played to try to get an edge, just like there always have been in college sports. But you hit on the key question, Mitch, to me, and this is where maybe Greg Sankey is going to have to take the lead. It seems like each league is going to have to decide, do we want to have some sort of uniform guardrails? This is the game we're playing. It is going to have X, Y, and Z. It's going to have rosters of this. This is how much you can pay your players. That's it. And there is going to be a salary cap, whatever it is, collectively bargained so that there is competitive balance. or do we want to have the wild, wild west? I would have to think at some point there needs to be sanity there.
I would agree, and I don't know how feasible that is.
I don't know either. That's the problem.
Right. I think it's as fans of the game, I think, I don't know what percent of people have come around, like, these guys should be paid. I mean, there's just so much money, TV money involved. They should be paid. But I just think we want some sort of level playing field to a degree. I mean, there's never been, you know, Alabama recruiting against, you know, Louisiana Monroe. I mean, they're like playing different sports. But you know what I'm saying? Just some sort of guardrails is the term, I guess. Just some sort of end game where we can all move forward. Because what's been going on now is just, like you said, the wild, wild west, whatever you want to say. So, and to Derek's point earlier, we just never know when this is going to end. Like, we think something's been resolved and then it just keeps going. This seems like obviously a huge step, the House case and what they're addressing now. So hopefully in the next few years, all this is resolved. I mean, there'll be another, you know, issue. I thought Steph Emerson, and our Georgia writer who's covering the SEC meeting, summed it up perfectly. He's like, the good news is no one's like arguing about 9 games versus 8 games in the SEC schedule, which seems
yeah.
But the
boring.
Bad news is, yeah, but bad news is there's far more important or annoying things to worry. Like, remember the cute old days when we were debating whether 8 or 9? Like, that's like 10th on the list now to talk about.
Unbelievable. So, Mitch, but go ahead.
No, I was just going to say quickly, Mitch, do you think it will get to a point where these, let's call them students right now, but honestly, we know that's not the case, even though they are going to class and getting a great education, but they're there for sports. Do you think it will come a time where these individuals will not be required to be full-time students? Not they don't have to go to class, but be full-time students.
I don't see that happening. Like, I just think, yeah, I'm trying to wrap my brain around what that looks like. And
exactly.
I know there's been talk about they just kind of represent, they're not even going to class, they're just representing Tennessee, or they're representing Alabama or Auburn. Like, I don't think anybody wants that. I don't know. I'll speak for myself. Like, I just don't know how that would look. So I'll say no, but, you know, 3 years we could be talking about something that looks like that. I don't know.
Mitch, before we let you go, give me a thought on Vanderbilt's outlook here, the draw that they got. Obviously, the Eric Backich angle of this is very intriguing, much like the Chase Burns backstory. If potentially a Tennessee Wake Forest super regional could happen. But I also noticed Vanderbilt seems to be getting healthier. They went through some really tough times. They did well to survive and get themselves in the tournament with a 2 seed, which a couple of weeks ago probably would have sounded pretty good, because you were thinking, are they going to be a 3? Are they even going to get in? But here they are, a 2, and it does look like they're trending in the right direction as far as getting all the arms they want and the players they want out there.
Yeah, I'm not saying that Tim Corbin doesn't always tell the truth about injuries. Well, actually, no, that's not what I am saying. But if you want to believe him, and I watched his press conference yesterday, he said with pretty strong conviction that Carter Holton will be available. And that's kind of what I'd heard, that they didn't want to pitch him in the SEC tournament, that he would be back. So if he's back and healthy, that's a great luxury, especially with the emergence of J.D. Thompson there. And Jaden Davis got an at-bat in the SEC tournament. I don't know what his status is. He's available. I don't know if you plug him back in at second base or you DH him. Because remember, he was leading the team and hitting in SEC games at the time of his injury. So that would be key there. So, yeah, it's an interesting – I mean, I think all things considered, if you would have told Vanderbilt fans waking up 2 Sundays ago before the last Kentucky game or 2 Saturdays ago that you're going to be number 2 seed, sign me up. Where do you take it? You know, the interesting Coastal Carolina in the opener, their coach Gary Gilmore is retiring after, like, you want to see the coaches won a lot of games. Because Google Gary Gilmore, baseball coach, though, because wasn't there a serial killer, Gary Gilmore?
Yes, I think he was played by Tommy Lee Jones in a movie one time. Yeah,
exactly. So be sure you Googling the right Gary Gilmore. Coastal Carolina won a ton of games, so he's retiring. And I heard a lot of people referencing this audio. I could not find it. But after they lost in the Sun Belt Conference tournament, like, his quotes evidently were like, oh, you know, we just didn't get it done. I look forward to retiring and not having any more games. Like, it was a guy who did not expect to make the NCAA tournament. And I think if you follow the bracketologists, they were a surprise addition to the field. Doesn't mean they're not good. They're very good offensively. I think they kind of struggle on the mound. So, you know, if you do believe that they're the last team in the field, you have to say it's a pretty good first-round matchup for Vanderbilt, but you know how those things work. Right, right. Clemson's very good.
Yeah, so give us a quick nutshell on Clemson, because that's
elite.
Yeah.
Yeah, a very good team. They were in that upper tier of ACC teams with North Carolina, Virginia, Clemson, and then maybe a half a tick below that was Wake and Duke, both very talented teams. They can struggle a little bit on the mound. They've got a good frontline starter. I don't know about a ton of pitching depth. They can swing the bats well. And there's a lot of pressure on them. Just cut me off if we have to go. But I heard a soundbite from Eric Backich. You know, I didn't realize this. They have not gotten to the second weekend since 2010. You know, remember, Vanderbilt has beaten them twice in regionals at Clemson. So there's a lot of pressure on this Clemson team to advance. They went 20-10 last year in the ACC, and they got a tough draw. They lost at home to Tennessee in the regional, and then they got bounced by Charlotte, actually. So, you know, you guys, you've been to baseball games. There's almost more nervous energy among fans at baseball than any other sport. If they get down or whatever, you know, just kind of, if you're watching the games this weekend, see if you can pick up on that, because I know they've been really good under Backich, but they got to break through this year.
And they obviously, people haven't watched the game at Clemson. It is a great atmosphere. They pack the house. Great crowds will be seeing this weekend. Mitch, great stuff as always. We'll probably check back with you later in the week as the tournament gets going.
Sounds good. Take care, guys.